And I think this is the part that, frankly, most people miss when it comes to digital workflows, is I've got to be able to mesh the data from when they have teeth to with the data when the teeth are all gone and the implants are there.
Welcome back to the Millennial Dentist Podcast, a podcast all about working smarter, not harder. Pushing dentists to go beyond dental school dentistry and build the practice of your dreams. Here is your host, the millennial dentist himself, Dr. Sully Sullivan.
It's good afternoon, evening here, but I don't know what it is where you are. Welcome back to the Millennial Dentist Podcast. Super pumped to be recording, per usual. I have a cocktail actually right now, so that tells you what time of day it is, and it is great. So we'll see where this podcast episode goes, because usually they're pretty good when I get to partake in a cocktail. But anyways, remember to check us out on YouTube. Go subscribe. We're doing a lot more video content now. You get to see me. We're going to bring in more, visuals, which is always good. If you like visuals, this one will be pretty audio oriented, but yes, we are doing that more. And we're going to be, pretty soon, we're going to be going live with a kind of an evening show, so to speak. That's what I'm really looking forward to. But anyways, we're going to talk about full arch hybrid dentistry today. Something I'm super passionate about. We're going to get a little clinical, something that I haven't been doing as much lately. And I was like, I should probably do that. So yeah, we're going to jump into it. But without further ado, if you listen and you like it, make sure you subscribe. Go give us 5 stars on iTunes, wherever you're listening. Leave a review. Share with your friends. This podcast is free. And it's just a labor of love, but I enjoy it. And so I'd love to get the word out. So go do that. And yeah, let's jump into it. So we're going to talk about full arch. Now, you know, I like to think that I've become a little bit of an expert on this. Maybe, you know, when it comes to like workflow, what we're doing, you know, to give some background, I was doing no full arch probably a couple of years ago. I started placing implants in 2017, took a lot of CE that was possible at the time to get better at bone grafting, sinus lifts, just full arch placement, full arch restorative placement. I've probably taken over, 1,000 hours in CE that's kind of directly or indirectly related to full arch. And now more than ever is it the best time to get into full arch because of what we can do with digital workflows and that sort of thing. So I kind of want to talk about, like, I guess, generally speaking, how we're doing our full arch workflows. So first off, foremost, you know, and I'm going to skip to kind of like their candidate, what are we doing, et cetera. So let's talk about surgery a little bit. One is we're doing a lot of guided surgery. So I started out learning to place implants freehand. And I think it's important to have some level of freehand foundational skill when you get into full arch, but I still am a firm believer that guided full arch is the best place to get started. And the reason I believe that is because one of the most challenging aspects of full arch, you know, implant dentistry is understanding the bone reduction that's needed and the restorative aspect of it. It's kind of like a single implant, honestly, whereas putting the implant in is the easy part. It's restoring it in the right position and having the right emergence to deal with the soft tissue, to do all these things that actually kind of partake in what is the best or the most needed to be a successful result. And really that's kind of the case here when we talk about full arch. Now there's a lot of buzz going around about FP1, FP2, FP3, and that's kind of the amount of prosthetic that shows whether it's, you know, really conserved as it relates to bone reduction. And I think that's a whole other podcast for another time. Frankly speaking, my hot take on it is that we're really FP1 driven right now. And like, I'm a believer in conservative full arch, and I think FP1s have a place, but I think right now it's driven by marketing and implant companies and not necessarily for the right reasons, so to speak. So that's a whole other caveat for the whole time, but I do think when you get into full arch, the best cases to get started are cases that are FP3, which means that the prosthetic is all hidden behind the lips, which means that typically there is going to be a little more bone reduction involved, which is my opinion is the hardest part. So with that being said, that's where I think guided surgery comes into play, because it's something that as a dentist placing singles or even cases for overdentures that you're not used to doing is the bone reduction. So when I think about, okay, what are the hurdles that we see with people when they're getting into full arch? and obviously we see this because we teach people how to do it, is that the bone reduction part typically is the part that takes the longest, is the most confusing, is the most scary, etc. And so you're going to typically under-reduce if you're in a free-handed environment, and that can cause problems. Obviously, it can cause aesthetic nightmares. What does that look like? That means transition lines showing, right? So now, all of a sudden, when they smile, I see this big gap between prosthetic and their real tissue, and that's not a good look. You've all probably seen cases like that, and so that's not ideal. The other part that we run into is not having enough material thickness, running into these things breaking more often, you know, causing more issues from a, just a restorative standpoint for it being successful. So when we get into like a traditional FP3 and having enough bone reduction, I think that guided surgery is still the best way to go about it, because what we're really guiding is how much bone reduction that we need to do. Now, guided system-wise, there's a lot on the market. You know, traditionally what we've used is chrome. Chrome guided surgery is great. What's nice about chrome is that it's a guide that's set off the foundation guide that all your guides, your stackable guides are built on, is not touching the bone. And that's important because when you look at making guides off of a cone beam or off of an STL file, and I'm going to assume that there's some level of lingo that you're familiar with that in this episode. And if you're not doing any implants, this may be a little over your head, but that's okay. You can listen to. But the point being is that there's natural inaccuracy. So if I, in a STL file where I'm making a tooth-borne guide, it's resting on the teeth, that's a really, really accurate file. When I'm using a cone beam to segment out the bone to make a foundation guide off that, there's natural potential issues that can cause by the accuracy level of the cone beam. And therefore, if I have something that's seating on the bone, that there's potential for error there. And so what's unique about that is that the way that the chrome guide is done is it's literally floating on the facial surface of the bone so that I can avoid any minimal inaccuracies that are there so that my guide seats. Otherwise, you might have to make it some adjustments. And then when you're having to adjust your guide seating, that starts to kind of like create some scariness. It's also really low profile as it's only on the facial side of the guide. So a lot of them have moved that way. It used to not be that, to where your guide would fully circumference around the palate or the lingual side of the teeth, which meant you had to make a much bigger flap. So again, that's a big component of now I'm not having to reflect as much palatal tissue, which is going to be really important as we transition to kind of what a digital workflow looks like. You know, I do a good bit of serial extraction guides where you're leaving some anterior teeth, maybe placing your angled implants, you're selectively extracting certain teeth, placing implants, and then removing teeth after the fact. You know, again, the downside of this is, do you need enough bone reduction? Does your guide offset get in the way? It definitely becomes more complicated in nature. So I'm a big believer, like I said, when people are getting started into full arch, I think fully stackable guided workflows are the way to go. And I think it sets you up for the most success, given that you're doing the bone reduction that you know you'll need to do for the prosthetic. It's prosthetically driven, and that ultimately sets you up for success. Now, once we've done that, then it kind of gets into like the more, how do you then restore or temporize the patient? And this is really where I think we've just come so far, and it's really made this process scalable to where you can really do this at a good scale and be profitable and affordable for the patient, and what we can do with digital workflows. And so really, there's a couple different components to this. One is the printing of the hybrid. Two is acquisition of the implant position. And three is where the teeth go in the face. So I'll kind of walk through those three things: what the prosthetic's made out of, implant position, and where the teeth go in the face. So let's talk about that first, I guess, where the teeth go in the face, because ultimately, like, everything that we do should be prosthetically driven. And that's kind of the foundation of which we want to plan our full arch. So what we do in a digital workflow is, ideally, we would have some sort of digital mock-up based off their original data to do a ideal tooth position. So just like you would do a mock-up for veneers or crowns, et cetera, we want to do the same thing so that we set the tooth position where we want it to be aesthetically within the face based off where their current data is. That will then show us whether we need to open the video, close the video, anything like that, to make sure that the teeth are in the right position. And then that's going to give us where we need to position our implants which goes back into the guided part of this, so that we've got enough reduction so that we have adequate thickness for the prosthetic. Now, as a side note on that, what I'll tell you is that traditionally, in a world where we used to kind of do like, you know, a bar wrapped with acrylic, et cetera, you know, 15 millimeters was kind of the standard of what we would do. Well, now we're talking about monolithic zirconia, no tie bases, direct to multi-units. There's no issue with us getting down to 10 to 12 millimeters. 12 millimeters is probably the ideal area, but there's definitely cases where I'm going down even as shallow as 10 and more of these conservative situations. So that's kind of the unique part about it, is because of the way that we can do it now, we remove a lot of the parts and pieces, we still have good thickness, and so we can be more conservative with the restoration at large. So the tooth position gets set by the photos. Some people are moving into facial scanners. I think there's definitely a place for it. You know, I've played around with some of the facial scanners. I haven't made the jump yet. I still think that good photography still does an adequate job as far as being able to overload those photos to put the teeth in the face where they need to go. And then we're going to be able to mesh that back to the patient by referencing the photo, the mock-up to the photo, photo to their current teeth. Now, if they've got dentures, we just use their dentures as kind of their set space. So like that becomes the baseline, so to speak. And it may be that we need to refabricate an immediate denture to get that into a better position before we start. Because what I'll tell you is that I find that I have to do way more adjustments if I don't get this stuff set as ideal on the front end. So going to the energy or effort to get a new denture made or to, and look, that's not hard in today's world, right? To get a new denture, we're talking about relining a current one, taking some photos, sending that to a digital designer. They design it. We print out a try-in, and that is making the new denture. So it's a very cost-effective way now that we can make sure that we nail the aesthetics on the front end so that when we do the surgery, we're not having to do a lot, as many adjustments with something that screws in and out of the mouth, because that's obviously harder to change. So at that point, we go to surgery and we've got our photos, our ideal design, and now I'm going to go into surgery. Now, the kicker here is once you take out all the teeth, and I think this is the part that frankly most people miss when it comes to digital workflows, is I've got to be able to mesh the data from when they have teeth to what the data when the teeth are all gone and the implants are there. So I've got position A and then position B, and I've got to find a way to mesh those two together. So that becomes kind of the hardest part in this process that I don't think people realize. And so, well, how do you mesh data? Well, you can do different ways of doing it. The most common are that we will leave some sort of what we call breadcrumbs, where we're going to either leave something that was there, that could be a tooth, say a second molar, first molar, where we're going to place all our implants anterior to that. We're going to leave that tooth. We're going to have a digital impression from the beginning. Then we're going to take a digital impression post-surgery, and that will mesh the two together based off that reference landmark. Probably more commonly what we're doing is we're actually putting in some sort of tad or screw or whatever you want to call it that allows us to reference the data pre-surgery to post-surgery. Because again, I've got to be able to reference my post-surgery data, that's your data with implants, all the way back to your mock-up design in the photo. We have to connect all those dots so that we build the teeth in the right position. So that could look like two or three tads or screws in the palate. That could be retromolar pads of the ramus. Like there's different areas where we can place those, but ultimately placing something like that that allows us to landmark something pre and post data is really important. Now, so we've talked about leaving teeth, screws and tads. The third we could do is obviously make a denture. And this is what we do every time when we don't have teeth in the beginning anyways, is that we can then wash the post-surgery scan data with a denture and then scan that 360 degrees. That may be a little more confusing, but what we're able to do is invert that denture that's washed over the implants. That gives us the position, it nets us back to the teeth, and the teeth then mesh back to the photo. So it's kind of the meshing of the meshing of the meshing, so to speak, but we've got to find a way to mesh post-surgery data to pre-surgery data and pre-surgery data to the photos, which is where we've done our digital mock-up design. At that point, we then can design the prosthetic and it should fit in the right position within the face, assuming that our data meshes well throughout that. So your data, your position in the face is and your occlusion is only going to be as good as the meshing of the data that you have. So that's step one. Step two is going to be implant position. So I try to make that clear, but what I'm getting at is that the meshing of the data is going to relate to your occlusion and the position of the teeth in the face. When you start to talk about implant position, will the prosthetic seat, that is going to be tied not to the meshing of data, but directly related to using photogrammetry or grammetry. Those are our two digital workflows. So let's talk about those. Photogrammetry is obviously the most common. It's also the most expensive. That's going to be Micromapper, iCam, or the PicScanner. These are where you're going to put scan bodies onto the multi-units of the implants. You're going to take an extraoral scan, and that will give you the implant position relative to each other. What that does not give is any sort of relation of where those implants are in the face. That's done by, again, the meshing of the pre-surgery to the post-surgery data. So all this is giving you is the exact implant position relative to the implants relative to each other. So what that means is that based off that data, we know that the prosthetic will always seat. So there's a scenario where your prosthetic seats perfectly, but your bite is off because of the meshing of the data from pre to post that we talked about with the digital impression. If your photogrammetry scans are good, your data will always seat. That's kind of the beauty of photogrammetry. Now, look, when you're getting into this, I mean, the reality is paying $40,000, $50,000 for a photogrammetry unit and you're doing one or two arches a month, the economics don't make sense. So it's kind of sucked for a while because it's either you're in or you're out, meaning you had to do a traditional workflow, or now you could do a full arch digital workflow, but you had to make this big financial investment. And thankfully, we've got some alternatives now that kind of bridge the gap so that the dentist that has a printer that wants to get into digital workflows can do that now only doing one or two arches a month. And that's using something like grammetry, which is where we're able to take digital impressions of intraoral scan bodies that allow us to get the same effect at an accurate level. The most common one that people see right now is OptiSplint. We take these scan bodies, we then put them in the mouth, then we loot them all together. That's the really important part. That's almost like you're essentially creating a verification jig like you would for an open tray impression. And then what we're going to do is we're going to take a digital impression of that extraorally. That way it's easy to scan, it gives us the reference markers. And what we're seeing is that data is, it's not as accurate, but it's pretty daggum close and very much clinically acceptable to compare to a photogrammetry standpoint. There's different companies on the market. Nexus iOS is one. The downside to them is it's all proprietary, so you have to use their lab for the finals, et cetera. I don't like that. There's different ones coming out right now that I've even been beta testing some of them. But OptiSplint is still kind of the standard, I guess, for a alternative to bridging the gap between photogrammetry and a conventional workflow. Cost-wise there, you're looking at about $400 to $500, and that's based off a per-unit basis. So you have to pay that every time, but obviously that's much more realistic than a $40,000 machine if you've only done two arches. So what my suggestion is you start digital workflows by, if you're in full arch, you should do your first two cases or so, I think, you know, maybe analog just to see what it's like. But very quickly, we can work into a digital workflow where you're doing everything guided up until implant placement. And then we switch over to something like grammetry that allows us to now do a digital workflow to get the temporary prosthetic and move towards final. And then at some point, based off volume, you move into photogrammetry because it does have its pros and that's way faster. You don't have the ongoing cost. And at the end of the day, it's hard to screw up the accuracy of that thing. It's so good. So again, big fan of that stuff right there. Now, so that kind of connects the first two. So again, face to pre-op data. Pre-op data to post-surgery is done through teeth, TADS, or denture. That gives us occlusion and teeth and face. Next step is then photogrammetry or grammetry. That gives us implant position, which is what tells us whether the prosthetic will seat or not seat. And then finally, it's going to come down to what we're doing with our printing of the prosthetic. And in that case, we're using Onyx Tough 2. I think it's the best resin on the market. We've got multiple shades now in, I think, A2, A1, and bleach. So we have a good variety of shades to kind of to land there. And then we get a really strong prosthetic that's doing really well. And now I've got a digital workflow that I can have. So if someone, the prosthetic breaks, I can reprint one. And I've got a true prototype of what my final will be. I think that's the biggest benefit to, you know, using a digital workflow is as soon as I get that prosthetic back and I seat it, I get to see what it's like, a true trial run of the final. Meaning if things look good there, all I got to do is change the intaglio at 3 or 4 months and I'm done. So I think that that's the best. Now, the caveat to this, obviously, is the printing's pretty straightforward. The resin's great. Now, all of a sudden, and I want to put a point on that. So we're using the SprintRay Pro 55S, and the full arch kit is absolutely amazing. So if you haven't gotten the full arch kit, you should definitely look into it. It's cutting our print down times almost in half. So to do a full arch hybrid now on the arch kit, it takes about, I think, roughly 18 to 22 minutes based off the thickness of the arch, which is down from 35 to 40 minutes. So it really makes doing a same day hybrid realistic, I think, or just a much easier process. And we're using the arch kit for night guards, surgical guides. It's not just for full arch, but it is significant. It's kind of become what I would call a workhorse platform from SprintRay on the printing side. So if you haven't gotten the arch kit, check it out. But it's definitely something that I think is, if you're doing full arch, like, it's a no-brainer to at least add that into your kind of arsenal from a printing standpoint. You know, moving beyond that, the only caveat we haven't talked to is design, right? How do you get your design? You know, we've used a number of different companies in that regard. But at the end of the day, we got to get a good design. So most of the time, what we're trying to do is pre-schedule this. So there's a lot of labs out there that do this. Some of the ones, you know, obviously SprintRay has a design service for this. We've used Rowe Dental Lab. They do a design service for this. Allenex Dental Designs also does one. So there's a number of people out there that will do same-day design. And you really got to, what I would tell you is, you know, you try them out, find someone you connect with, you communicate with. The pricing's all really competitive, I would say. You're looking at somewhere probably between $300 to $450 at arch design. But again, now I've got a workable prototype that I can move from to final when I get to the end. Last but not least, probably the only thing I haven't talked about is screws. I've used almost all the screws. I've used Dess, Powerball, the SIN screw, Rosen screw, Vortex. Being fully transparent, I've had all of them break. They've all worked in some capacity. You know, Vortex is the screw that we've landed on and we seem to be using the most. The reason I love the Vortex screw is a couple things. One, it's angle corrected every time, so I don't have to buy a separate screw if I need to correct an angle. Because I do some level of freehand surgery, it's possible I put a multi-unit in the wrong place. I need to correct 10, 12 degrees to get my access holes in the right position. I like that aspect of it. It's affordable when you buy them. That's important. It's also, I think, a good design with a minimal access hole. That was some of my negative to, like, the Powerball, is just a big access. Yeah, so that's kind of, yeah, like I said, they all work, but I've seen them all break. So I don't die on that hill by any means, but that's what we're doing in our practice. And so, yeah, I think it's really unique what we can do now with a digital workflow. And I think the part that's really the story is the stage two, in which it's really all team driven. And now that my team can take the digital impressions, they can swap out some of the stuff. And now we get to see that we could really start to scale this business to where it's not unbelievably taxing on my body by doing all these conversions and whatnot. So vertically integrating, being able to print, do the scans, do all the digital impressions is important. And ultimately it makes the process really, really good. So that's kind of what we're doing on the full arch side right now. If you got specific questions, let me know. I will tell you, look, this is something we're passionate about at 3D Dentist. If you're thinking about taking the leap into full arch, we have live patient courses where you can actually come do the didactic part and then actually do a live full arch on a patient. We provide the patients, you just show up in North Carolina and you'll get to actually do a fixed full arch and a removable full arch. We'll do it a completely digital workflow, so you get hands-on experience with all the stuff I talked about. I really think it's a great program. That's a no-brainer to do if this is something that you're looking at bringing into 2024. If it's something that you're already doing, we've got a great course called Scale Your Full Arch. This is not meant to be an advertisement, but I want you to know about it because our Scale Your Full Arch program is so good. And that's where we really, the course includes a treatment coordinator, a phone person, and an assistant. So we go over all the digital workflows. But what we really do that's important is we talk about how do we manage leads? How do we get leads? How do we deal with the leads? How do we deal with the consults? How do we deal with financing, the barriers to entry, all the things that allow you to go from, you know, hey, I've done 2 to 4 arches a month to get to 10, 12, 14, 15 arches a month. So that's what we're doing in our practice. And we'd love to share more about that. And I'll do another episode at some point on that. But I definitely wanted to kind of talk a little clinical about the digital workflows we're doing, the pros on it. So I hope you enjoyed this. And yeah, everybody works smarter and harder. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.